Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. I'm impressed everybody's here this early. That's nice. I'm going to be talking about, for the moment, hepatitis C virus screening strategies in the United States. Look at that. All right. I'm going to try to cover a number of things, again, in this very short 12-minute window. I'm going to add a little bit more to the hepatitis C disease burden based on some modeling studies we've done. Talk about the current HCV screening recommendations in play in the U.S., how they're currently being implemented and their effectiveness. Talk briefly about one particular current HCV screening study that we have, and then give you an overview of a study that we're looking at specifically to reach that age population that Scott was referring to, those persons born from 1945 through 1964. So as background, we've conducted a couple of different modeling studies where we forecasted HCV morbidity and mortality over the next 50 years between 2010 and 2060. So we developed a simulation model using parameter estimates as chronic cases from primary data as well as published sources. And we simulated patient progression through chronic asymptomatic liver disease, through cirrhosis, decompensated cirrhosis, hepatocellular carcinoma or liver cancer, liver transplants, and death. And as I mentioned, we looked at this from 2010 through 2060. And this work is published in the Journal of Digestive Liver Diseases, but the one piece I want to highlight here is when we look at forecasted annual incident cases of end-stage liver disease and death, what we see if we look at that red line, that's the one I want to try to draw your attention to, is starting from a very conservative estimate of just about 7,500 to 8,000 deaths per year, which we know is an underestimate just based on some of what Scott just presented. We looked at how those deaths will progress over the next 50 years. And as you can see, between now and about 2016, it slowly increases and it gets up to about 10,000 deaths per year. But then that curve really steepens considerably and goes all the way up until when we see in the decade of the 2030s, where we forecast at least 35,000 deaths per year, specifically with a cause of HCV. So there's an awful lot of morbidity and particularly mortality that we think is going to come from HCV. The only good news that I get from a slide like this is that we do have this window right now, kind of from 2010 to 2016, to potentially really have some real positive health impact if we can improve our screening. We took this model and we've taken it kind of one step further. And then based on 2005 to 2006 NHANES data, we estimated that 2.8 million Americans in primary care are chronically infected with HCV right now. And when we look at that population, and we look at over the course of their lives, without any enhanced intervention, so no change in how screening is currently occurring, the background screening rate of about 18.5%, that's how many people, that's the percentage of people we believe have been screened who are anti-HCV positive. And with no changes in treatment, even though we know there are new treatments coming down the road, we estimate that of this 2.8 million, almost 1.5 million of them will develop cirrhosis. Of that group, 546,000 will develop decompensated cirrhosis, 350,000 will develop liver cancer, 115,000 will require a liver transplant, but we certainly know that there will not be available donors for all those persons, and that will certainly contribute to this remarkably high proportion of almost 900,000 people will die who are currently infected. Of that 2.8 million, we estimate that almost 900,000 of them are going to die from complications of hepatitis C. That's almost a third of that entire group. Frequently people say, oh, well, hepatitis C, that's not something you die from. Usually people with hepatitis C are going to die from something else. Well, certainly not. I think that we can easily say that at least a third of them are going to die from hepatitis C, unless we're able to do something to make a change in that regard. So I'd like to briefly cover what our current screening recommendations are. They date to 1998, which might as well be dinosaurs roaming the earth in terms of how frequent that was. Recent that was, but our screening recommendations are that people should be screened if they've ever injected illegal drugs, if they received clotting factors made before 1987, if they received blood or organs before July of 1982, when the blood supply was eradicated from HCV, if they've ever been on chronic hemodialysis, if they have any evidence of liver disease, if they were infants born to HCV-infected mothers and persons who are HIV-infected. So how are we doing with those? Not so good, I think. But that's going to be the takeaway from this slide. When we look at persons who are anti-HCV positive, and we think about that universe of people that we know to be about 4 million people who are anti-HCV positive, we think about how many of them actually know their status so that they could do something about it. We've looked at several studies that the division has done over the last couple of years. One study in Kaiser Permanente, Georgia, we looked at 15 clinics. We looked at 557,000 people who'd received care for at least a 12-month period between 2000 and 2007. So we had 2 million enrollee years during that time. We found that over that time, all those people, 4.3% of them had ever been screened for hepatitis C. And their identified anti-HCV prevalence in that population was 0.22%. Now, as I'm certain you know, NHANES, based on an NHANES estimate, CDC thinks that about 1.6% of the population in the U.S. is anti-HCV positive, which leaves us with an unidentified anti-HCV positive group there, 85%. 85% of the people with anti-HCV do not know it in this population, is what we would estimate. We also did another study at Montefiore Medical Center, three clinics in the Bronx. The much higher risk population, lots of injection drug use, HIV prevalence of 4.5%, which is four times the national average. And so a lot more risk there. And they were doing a lot more screening. They'd screened 40% of all of their patients. When you looked at the identified anti-HCV prevalence, it was 4.2%, which is incredibly high. But when we sat down and looked at the risk profiles of that 40% of the people who were positive, and then we extrapolated that to the 60% of the population that hadn't yet been tested, we estimated that the expected anti-HCV prevalence across those three clinics was probably 7.7% based on those risk profiles. That means that of all persons with anti-HCV in that population, 45% of them still don't know it. Then in the CHECK study, which is the chronic hepatitis cohort study, which is a natural history study that Scott's group is doing for both hepatitis B and hepatitis C, they have four different large managed care organizations located across the country. And right now in their cohort, they have about, well, I shouldn't say that. They've been able to look at retrospectively about 850,000 different people across these four groups. And of those, 0.66% were anti-HCV positive. Now, if we assume, again, like we would for Kaiser Permanente, that the NHANES estimate is probably what we would expect anti-HCV to be there, we estimate that 59% of the persons who are anti-HCV positive across these four different groups don't know it. Last but not least, Kaiser Permanente in Northern California, we recently did a retrospective study there looking at the feasibility of conducting a birth cohort screening strategy where everyone who was born between 1945 and 1965 would be screened one time and to get a sense of how might that actually work in that kind of a setting, in that kind of a population. So we looked at that birth cohort to get a sense of how many people had already been screened and what was the anti-HCV prevalence in that group. Well, we estimated that to be 1.6%. And when we look at NHANES and we break down those people who are in care, who have insurance, and are in that birth cohort, our expected anti-HCV prevalence there would be 2.7%. So again, that leaves us with an unidentified anti-HCV prevalence there of 40%. So 40% is as good as it gets of the percentage of people who are unaware of their status. That means they're not getting any prevention messages. They have no opportunity to receive treatment because no one is aware that they actually have this illness. And there are certainly treatments out there that can cure their disease. So I'm just going to touch on one of our HCV screening studies, talk a little bit more about the one that we did in Montefiore in the Bronx. We did a serial cross-sectional study there, and the data that I reported to you a moment ago was from the baseline phase conducted in January and February of 2008. We looked at the EMR data to try to get a sense of what were the screening practices and prevalences there. And then our goal in this study was to try to increase HCV screening rates within these three clinics. So we developed an enhanced risk screener. And those were put in the chart, and the clinician was supposed to go through those risk screeners with every single one of their patients who came in. And then if they had any sort of positive, so it had all the possible risks that were in there. And so any yes check immediately meant that they should order an HCV test. Then at the end of that, we stopped that piece and we implemented the birth cohort screening strategy. This is the only place we've done this prospectively. And we looked at, and then we got rid of the risk screener because they were done with that. That was actually rather taxing for them. And we had serious adherence issues over time. But when we implemented the birth cohort screener, that was just, it was a reminder. They didn't have to do anything other than order a test one time for those persons who hadn't been tested before for HCV. And this is what we found. First off, they're already testing at a fairly remarkable rate. In January and February of 2008, they screened 6% of the people who came into those three clinics, which is really remarkably high. We think you compare that to Kaiser Georgia, where they'd screened 4.3% over an eight-year period. So they're already very attuned to HCV. We know that they've already screened 40% of their clinic population. But when we implemented the enhanced risk screener, the proportion of persons who were tested went up to 13.1%. And when we implemented the birth cohort screening strategy, the proportion went up to 9.9%. Now, in our analyses, we only compared the baseline to the enhanced risk screener and the baseline to the birth cohort. We didn't compare the enhanced risk screener to the birth cohort strategy, primarily because of the serious adherence issues that we had. I have a feeling if we'd done the birth cohort screening strategy first, that could have been 13%, and if we'd done the risk screener second, that could have been 10%. I think that had more to do with when we did them. We saw testing rates started out really, really high, and adherence declined pretty dramatically, even just over a 15-week period during the enhanced risk screener. We're working on a paper right now looking at adherence and trying to get a better sense of how well does an enhanced risk screener strategy work in a setting like this. All right. Now I'd like to talk just a little bit about BEST-C. This is the birth cohort evaluation to advance screening and testing for hepatitis C. This is in two phases. It's a retrospective and prospective. Retrospectively, we're going to do something similar to what we've done in a few other sites by looking at anti-HCV screening practices and prevalence. We're going to do this over four different large primary care settings. As you can see here, these are the four sites that are part of this study. The study started in September, so we are already beginning this. Henry Ford Medical Center, Mount Sinai, UAB, and the University of Texas at Houston are all excellent programs and all have liver clinics. And so we're going to take a look specifically at what was their current HCV screening practices and prevalences in those sites. We're also going to conduct a cost analysis where we assess costs of screening and treatment at these four different sites. And one of the most important pieces is they're going to develop a plan to implement the prospective study. We've tried to do this in other sites, and it is actually quite challenging. We tried to do it in Kaiser, Georgia, and we were not able to. So for the prospective study, what we want to do is evaluate the effectiveness and implementation for routine opt-out one-time anti-HCV screening of all persons born in the selected high-prevalence cohort. And we're thinking that that's the 1945 to 1965 group. And so we expect to have a clinic sample of patients of between 8,500 per 10,000 or to 10,000 per site. And it's going to be a passive system. So it's just going to be people who come in. There will be no recruitment effort. We're not going to do any public education effort at any of these sites. We're just going to try to see what's most likely is if we put out a policy like this, it's going to happen systemically. A system is going to put it in place, but they're probably not going to do a whole lot of public education campaign around it. They're just going to put it in there, and our goal is to have it just be like any other test that you would have a screen when you come in and get your serology done. It's just like your cholesterol. It's like anything else. We think this will probably take, it's not going to take a full 24 months just to figure out the screening piece of it. But our main outcomes are really to be able to assess an increase in anti-HCV testing, like we were able to see at Montefiore. But at the Montefiore sites, we weren't powered enough to really be able to assess a change in yield or the percentage of new positives that we find. But this study is going to be powered to do that. There are a few other outcomes of interest for this study. I'll just cover them briefly. Finding people who are anti-HCV positive and not linking them to medical evaluations or care is not helpful. So it's very important that we take a look at what are the linkage to care strategies that each site is going to use, and how well does it work for them. We're going to be conducting a cost-effectiveness strategy where we'll be looking at the cost analysis from the retrospective as our baseline. We're also going to be looking at the feasibility and acceptance of this particular strategy by the medical staff. When we try to do this at Kaiser, Georgia, We had a lot of difficulty, and they were not very supportive of it at all. And it was a much bigger challenge than we expected. And so we really want to make sure and get a sense of how do clinicians and administrative staff feel about this kind of thing, and where are they at in actually trying to get it started. Lastly, as a sub-study, we'd like to be able to evaluate the impact of screening on patients working with AHRQ. As you know, AHRQ works with the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, who has different recommendations that CDC does for HCV screening. Theirs are based primarily on the harms of screening, whereas CDC, from a public health perspective, tends to perceive it more as the benefits of screening. So we're trying to work with them to get a sense of, is there a sub-study we may be able to do here to get them some more data? So I know they're in the process right now of updating their recommendations. Of course, we'd like to see them be a little more liberalized than they are right now. The timeline for our new recommendations, we're already drafting them now. We'll be working on them through the spring and summer of next year. We expect to have 2 to 3 consultations in summer of 2011, and it's our goal to have the screening guidelines published in early 2012. Thank you very much for your time and attention, and we'll save questions till later.
Okay. Thank you, Bryce. Our next speaker, third colleague of mine, is Dr. Iyasu Tshala. And Dr. Tshala has been with CDC for the past 7 years, and since 2007 with the Division of Viral Hepatitis. He's a medical epidemiologist with the Epidemiology and Surveillance Branch, and he conducts both domestic and global hepatitis research.